Did you say we were at 401? Is that right?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, I think we're recording.
Okay. Do we have an are you taking notes, Leslie?
I
Or
am.
okay. All right, so 401, call the meeting to order. And I've got the names here in front of me, so I can just do roll call. I'm Loretta Broomfield and I'm here. Let's see, Kevin Kelsey,
Here.
Tammy Kraus,
Here.
and Karen Bounds.
She just dropped off.
Okay, maybe she'll
So
be back. Okay, is there any?
here
There's
she is.
coming back.
No, did you ask about public comment?
Yeah, public comment. No public comment. Okay. Okay, so we have the minutes from our last meeting, which was way back in October, October 11th, 2022. Do we have a motion to approve those minutes?
Move.
Second.
A second. Thank you. Karen Bounds, are you with us yet? Okay. Kevin Kelsey?
Yes.
Tammy Kraus?
Yes.
And this is Loretta. I say yes. Karen, can you hear us? Okay, we're still good without Karen's vote, right?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Motion carries there. Unfinished business is the next item. And then Leslie has information about the Edwardsville roof update.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. I wanted to give you an update on where things are on our roof. We asked the contractor, I'm sorry, let me shut my door, just a second. I apologize for my eager beagle. He gets easily excited. So we're not allowed on the roof. They wouldn't let us on the roof to take photographs. So if you don't mind, I'll share my screen. I'll just show you. I've got some photos in the chat. It's not from the roof itself. I need to share. Where's? I'm not able. There it is. Okay. Okay. All right. So I don't know if you're seeing. Are you seeing my screen?
No.
No. I am so sorry. Let's try that one more time. Here it is. Let's see.
There we go.
Okay, and that's the wrong screen, but I'll get right to the screen we need. Not a problem. Are you seeing it now?
Yes.
Okay, so these are, I don't know if I can make them any bigger. The first image, again, this was a chat that Leah sent me at the end of the day yesterday. This is looking back from the back, a door upstairs. There's a big dumpster down there. And then in the background, there's a bunch of white things. That's the material that the roof is. That's the, well, I don't know what they're called. I don't know what it's made out of, some kind of composite. And then more stuff from the roof that's going to get dumped, I guess, at some point. That's by our dumpster. And then I think that came off the roof the first week. And this is sand, a rock, little pebble that was on the roof, the old roof. They're the contractors last night, and they have a crane. So that's all that I have. They have not given us any new ones, although they said that they would. All this is to say that we've not found anything. They've not come across anything structurally that we need, would need any kind of a change order for. There's no, they, all of the old roof has been removed. And as they're replacing it, like the steel beams and stuff are still fine. They haven't found any damage to any of those that we would have to replace. So I'm really relieved. We have had a little bit of damage from yesterday. I think the rain yesterday. So they started yesterday morning and it rained earlier. It rained overnight. We got in the building and we had some ceiling panels were really full of water. We can just replace those. And then there was a little more water this morning. They thought that that might have been getting in from around where they took the flashing off of the HVAC units. So maybe it's come down from around that. So as long as that's the only interruption that we have, then we're pretty happy with it. Several years ago, I don't think any of you were on, Tim, you might have been. Were you on the board when we replaced the roof in Champaign? It was a crazy experience. Okay. It was horrible. The roof is in, this roof seems to have lasted like the approximate 60 years and been intact when it was removed. So we're glad about that, because what was happening on the roof and the Champaign roof was not that lucky, didn't fare that well. So keep our fingers crossed and hope that no news is really just no news, and that will be done. They thought they would be done. They told us this morning they thought it would be done mid next week if the weather holds.
Oh, good. I was going to ask about the weather, because we've been getting a lot of rain here.
Yeah, we did too over the weekend, like on Saturday and Sunday. So in the Eversville area. So hopefully after yesterday's rain, that's all there's going to be for a while, and they can finish it. They really worked. They were there early yesterday till it was almost six when Leah messaged me. So they're really pushing it to get it done as well. So we're really happy with that. Did you guys have any questions? I can ask them specific questions and get back to you if you have any.
I don't.
Okay. Hopefully I'll have some more images for the board meeting.
So, well, you know, I said I don't have a question, and now I'm going to ask the question. You said that there's a pile of sand in the back. Are they putting new sand up there? I've never seen sand on a roof.
It's not a sand. It's a pebble. I'm sorry. It looks like a sand. It looks like sand. It's like a kind of a light brown, and they're really small rock. It's really, really tiny rock that was over on the top of the old roof surface. So they first had to scrape all that off. And I think they used some kind of a chute to get it down and into the parking lot. So that surface, I don't even think they make those kinds of roofs anymore.
Okay.
No sand. I said that wrong. But it's tiny little pebbles.
Right. Okay.
Tiny little pieces. And I don't even know what we could even, I was like, can we use it for something for landscaping? But I don't even know what we would use it for. To be really honest, I don't know what purpose it would have. It's like small, like in like fish tanks, that really tiny stuff. Yeah. So
now that I think about it, maybe I have seen that, like hospitals and stuff. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know that they do that anymore. They used to. Just, it's like a hail protector.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, just to keep the roof material from getting damaged.
Yeah.
Well, it seems to have worked.
I've not seen it for a long time.
Hi, Karen. Can you hear us?
Well, yeah, finally.
Okay, and good. Nice to see you. We were just talking about the roof, and that so far so good. The roof in Edwardsville, no damage. I'll have some kind of a little slideshow for the board meeting with everything. So hopefully in another few weeks, and we'll all be good to go. Yesterday, the next item under unfinished business is the AMH handler update. Yesterday, we had a meeting with the AMH working group, and we talked about what next steps are, what we see as next steps. We shared with them a document. At the previous meeting, they had asked us for feedback from one library's Cochin County Library System in Washington. We're writing back and forth from them. So we shared that information from them. We shared from King County, we shared and their experiences with the material handler, the same with the St. Louis County Public Library main branch and our main building, and the two member libraries that we went to, Champaign and Decatur, in the winter. So their feedback. Let's see. We also talked about what we see as next steps beyond yesterday's meeting. So I have to reach out to Phil Mancini for to make sure, or to make sure that there's no liability questions if we, or what needs to be in place if we were to in the future rebarcode some libraries' items, just to make sure that legally we're everything, all T's are crossed. And equipment that we probably need to do that moving forward. We've started to look at how we can grab the next piece is how many items really need to be rebarcoded in total. We've identified what libraries have their barcodes in on the inside and which don't from our look. We did that hub by hub. And it appears to be right at about half have them inside, half have them outside. Some of them have both. So we also know from their delivery survey, we're going to cross those results and see if they seem to be consistent. It seems to be slightly more members have them on the outside, I think, than on the inside, according to the survey. But that could just be the folks. Not every library responded to that. So we're trying to get our heads around what that big number is. Is it a million items? Is it 3 million? I mean, how many items is it up? The share members in total have a little less than 9 million items. And so, but not every item circulates. Some items circulate 30, 40 times. Some never circulate. So we're working on what kind of, how do we look at that information and with the existing share or Polaris reporting? So we got a couple of preliminary numbers yesterday that Troy's like, you can't use that because I'm not sure that those are real, that those are final. So, but it's better than I thought in terms of how many would have to be barcoded if we're looking at only things that circulate. And then the last of our to-dos that we're going to be working on next is making proposals, developing proposals as to how that barcoding would happen. Would it be only IHLS staff doing it as items come through delivery? Would it be a combination of we added a lot of libraries to the share database. So we had what we call barcoding SWAT teams. So it would basically be, what would that take in terms of staffing and hours and stuff? What would we have to be prepared with to be able to support? And then we shared a document with the work. We also shared a document with the working group from our marketing and communications staff that looks at this is all that, to make sure that we are all on the same page as to what our experiences were when we had site visits. And that's all really important. We want to put that on the website and make sure that we are all agreeing to that. This is a long way towards saying that we really, as we were preparing for this meeting with the AMH working group, we were more and more convinced that the only way that we can get good numbers for the budget and what this total project could cost would be to move forward with an RFP. So we started the process with the working group thinking that we would naturally come to a conclusion after meeting several times and taking some site visits that then we would have all the information that we need to move forward and make a recommendation, either go purchase the equipment or not purchase the equipment. We aren't at that place. And the level of detail that we received from the request for information when we did that last year wasn't sufficient for us to that plus everything. We don't have enough information. So although I went into this thinking that we would be asking the committee, would you make a recommendation or the working group, would you make a recommendation to move forward with the RFP or not? That's really like our next step anyway, because we won't be able to get all the final details unless we go with that process. So we talked about that with the working group. And that's the other piece of this they aren't elected by members. They're not, the working group is not elected by members. They're not like board members. They're not share governance members. I think that some of them are reluctant to say, yes, you should do this. No, you shouldn't, because a lot of the impact, a lot of that decision-making doesn't rest with them as a working group, if that makes sense. So while it's good to get their feedback and it's really good to take them on, to have them go on site visits with us, I think I overestimated what they felt comfortable doing in terms of making recommendations. So they did talk about, and they seemed to be very comfortable with the fact that we would make a proposal to hire a consultant to draft an RFP, a request for proposal, in FY 2024. And that we would make that recommendation to the board in May. We have included in the budget for FY 2024, I think approximately maybe around $30,000 for a consultant to do that work. So it's already in the budget. If it's approved, if the budget is approved, then that's part of it, and we're good. And so far, no one has said to us, no, no, you shouldn't do that. If that makes any sense. I didn't anticipate how that would flow with the working group, and live and learn. I mean, we had to go through it. If the board is okay with this RFP process, I would recommend that we continue to meet with the working group, because I think there's a lot of valid feedback that we can get from them. And these are really people who volunteered to do this. They weren't voluntold necessarily to be on it. So they are passionate about delivery. They're passionate about resource sharing and making sure that everybody, we're all doing everything we can to serve all of your patrons as well as we can and as quickly as we can. So for that fact, and there, it's really valuable insight from them. We've learned a lot from them about what they think they would need with automatic material sorting, automatic sorting material handling equipment. Like, we can, there are different facets of, there are different pieces of like add-ons that we learned about through the RFI process that some vendors have that we wouldn't necessarily need, because they may not be a benefit to members. So one company offered a bin level check-in. So that would mean, and that would be available even if a library didn't have RFID tags on their equipment. So it would basically produce a manifest. The software would produce the manifest that would be available to the member library when they got there. And I think they would just scan the information or enter information from this manifest, and then those items would be automatically checked in a library. That works really well if you have very, very large libraries that have, you know, so many bins, I think every day that there are several bins that are of items that are all they have to do is be reshelved at the library. And then other bins that need to be put on the hold shelf, whether you have to print a wrapper that goes around the outside of the book that has the person's last name on it, the patron's last name, or however they're identified on a hold shelf for patrons. It works really well if you have that much volume that they're separate, if that makes sense. But I don't know that many of our members have that large a volume that we would be able to have separate types of bins that go to them every day. So that's one thing that came out of the site visits with the and conversations with members of the working group. So we learned that's very helpful. Another thing that we learned from the working group is that we thought that we would be able to eliminate all receipt paper. We won't necessarily be able to eliminate all receipt paper. The one that comes out, and it's kind of slightly sticky, so it comes out of the little receipt printer and it slaps on the book, and that's what goes with when we route. We thought we would be able to eliminate all of that, but they're still going to need that when they internally, when they take things out of the bins, so to identify what's what. So that part has been helpful as well. And you might be surprised to know that group is very interested in where people put their barcodes. They're keenly interested in barcode placement, inside, outside. Even yesterday, there was a conversation. They're like, yeah, we're all going to put it on the back, right? And somebody said, no, we're putting them on the front. So if there's a group of members that cares where that goes, that's them. And so for that reason, if the board decides to move forward with an RFP process, I would really like to keep working with them. Because there's really good...
That group is probably more operational rather than strategic. They're going to be able to say, oh, this is how we, if we do it, this is how we would do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's, my guess is they're probably reluctant to say, do it.
Yeah.
The question is, who are the right people to say, do it or don't do it? And I don't know who that is.
I think it's going to be you all.
I think it is.
As the board. They are though they are invested in it. And so I'm going to put that
probably for most of them, this is a lot of money. You know, based on their budgets, this is a huge number. And so that kind of intimidates them as well. So we have to take that into account.
I agree with you. I appreciate that because we have some folks that are library directors and some folks that are staff at libraries, just depending on, you know, their position in their building. And that's not their focus. And they're also aware of the fact that there is a board and that there is like a shared governance that's going to, you know, might have some feedback on this as well. We've not really talked to the share governance group about this. The piece that we would talk to the share governance group about would probably be that we would focus on is barcode placement. But unless the board feels really confident in saying you have to put it on the back right upper corner of an item, I would think that it's sufficient just to say, have it on the outside of your item. And then if, as a general manner, as a general guide, then if share members want to say, for consistency between share members, we'd like Loretta could say, or Karen's library, any of your libraries could say, well, we always want to see them here when we're scanning them at the checkout desk or something. We prefer to see them on the front or, you know, here or on the back. That part I think might be more specific to share than the system as a whole, because we have a lot of members who are not members of share and don't participate in that. So for them, that's not the issue, if that makes sense, where it is. We can, we're having it on, just knowing that for our purposes, again, at the system, there's equipment that we can buy. So basically there would be an eye that sits at the bottom or on the bottom of the scanner on the belt. And then another eye that sits on the top that can read a barcode either place. So that would be all that we would need. And it would be fine. And we, IHLS really hardly has any collections to speak of anyway. At our hubs, we no longer have like a library, we have very few reference materials that we lend out. So I don't think that we have a dog in this fight. No, not on this one.
No.
Not on this one. So
they're going to be very operational. We mm-hmm. should be strategic. We shouldn't care about where the thing is. We should care, is it a good thing to do rather than how you're going to do it? So that's what, in my mind, that's what a board does, is we look at, does this make sense from a financial standpoint? Are we getting bang for our buck? What's the purpose? And that's really what I'm looking at now, is how much we spend in and how much we're going to save, and does it make sense? And that's, I think, especially when you bring it to the full board, I think that's the question that's going to, because I'm going to ask it, What's the bang for the buck? Are we saving enough money, or are we creating extreme efficiencies for the members such that it's worth it? And honestly, I haven't seen that yet. So that's where I'm going to give you pushback. I'll just
tell
you flat out.
Who has systems in place?
I'm sorry?
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, please.
Who has one of these systems in place?
Our members or people outside of the system?
People outside of the system.
The St. Louis County library system has one.
Mm-hmm.
They have it at their main branch where they route, that's a processing center. So for new materials goes through there. Mm-hmm. They also do some routing through there for St. Louis County is a separate library, is a separate organization from St. Louis Public Library, but they are now doing resource sharing more collaboratively. So like St. Louis Public is now sharing. So the public's materials can't currently go through their system because they don't recognize the barcode. But at the location that we saw, it was all 99% of what went through that day when we were there observing was brand new material. So just processed, all ready to go out. Mm-hmm. They also have routing equipment at two or three of their larger branches, and they are looking to purchase more AMH equipment for their other branches. So that's probably, for some of us, that might be the closest to view. Then there is, again, outside of our system, the Chicago Public Library, which functions like a system within the city, they have that equipment at their main branch, and they use that for sorting as routes come in and go get prepared to go out the next day. They also have a system. I don't know what vendor they use. I know they've had a couple because of the volume is just so large that they've had, they've one wore out and they got another one like 10 or 15 years later. The King County Library System I think it's in Washington, but maybe it's in Oregon. Now that I say that, Washington, they've had one for 20 years. They're planning to go out for proposals for a new system, but they move around 9 million items a year. So quite a bit of volume. And that is the system that one of our staff members had seen when she was out there at a conference one time several years ago. And that's kind of when all of this started, when she saw what was possible with that. There's this much larger, it's like what I would imagine if we had just one hub and all that volume was, in one building. It's a much more involved setup. And let's see, New York Public has a similar system. I don't know about the Brooklyn Public Library where they also have that equipment. But looking at agencies that have that equipment in the way that we would use it, meaning you sort by a building location as opposed by to a shelf location, those are the ones that I know of that have that size, something similar to what we might see.
Do you know, has anyone on this working group or you talked to anyone at ReaderLink?
No.
It's I don't know if it's an energy or Marion. Actually, okay. Two of my staff members went out there. We wanted to do a field trip out there for our adult summer reading program this year. And they went out and ended up coming back with lots of goodies and stuff that they donated. If you don't know what ReaderLink is, it's that big, huge, it's a book distribution center. So things that end up at Ollie's and Big Lots and that kind of stuff that they don't sell those things, they go back to this distribution center. But they got a tour through the building, and they had when Kelly was describing it, she said, it sounds very much like what IHLS is wanting to do. Now, I imagine it's on a much larger scale because it's in a huge building. But she said, you know, the books just go down on a conveyor belt and it shoots them into a box. And so that's something that's here in Southern Illinois that you probably would want to, you know, call and inquire first, because it may totally not be like the other things that you're looking at. But we're hoping to go on a tour this summer of the building.
So it's called Reader, R-E-A-D-E-R, just Link?
Yep, Reader, okay. Link, yes.
Okay. No, I've not heard of that, but that doesn't mean anything. And we would love to take a look at something and another option, how that could be arranged.
Yeah. I've been trying to think of ways for 2 years of ways we could collaborate with them and, you know, do something.
Oh, yeah.
And I went out there and I was like, I never even thought just to say, hey, will you give us some books? We got all kinds of cool stuff for summer reading prizes, stuff like that.
Huh. No, it might be interesting to see how they, it's more like a warehouse setup, sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
How they're sorting and like the volume. Yeah, there's the only other vendor, I know that a lot of vendors do this. I've never been at like an Amazon warehouse where they sort, so that just seems kind of too far. And yeah, I did work at a vendor one time, but there was nothing that was automated. So nothing to compare, but we definitely want to look at that and see how they're set up.
Yeah, it's worth looking into, I think.
Yeah.
The only thing that we as a board will need to be cognizant of is cost to the members, because that's what's going to drive this. If they can't afford it,
yep,
it won't go. And you know, as far as where barcodes are, that can be dealt with, but that, as Kevin pointed out, is more on the operational end of it, the practical end of it, as to having things function properly. But what it's going to come down to for the libraries is, what is it going to cost them? And unless we can make that accessible to all of them, we're singing in the wind here. And I know that has been expressed by others on the board, but it's all going to come down to cost for the libraries. And we can give them information as we go, as far as how this functions and what it would look like and how it will work and all that. And that's all good information. But it can also come to a point where it's a bit overwhelming, I think, for libraries from a practical standpoint. They just won't have a clue how they can make that work.
And I also think that there's going to be a question about, what good is this to me?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a PR question.
If
you don't have the answer to that, then we've failed on the marketing side too. So we've got to let them know what that means.
Yep.
I appreciate both of your comments. And Kevin, your comment about, you know, what does it help a member at the local level? How does it make their life better? Is it a neutral impact, right, on them? Maybe there's no impact, maybe there's no change. And is that a good thing? That's one of the reasons why we've been very interested in, like, before we even put anything up on our website about the automatic material handler process and what we're learning, we had that working group go through that material, those items that what we intended to post. So these are FAQs. What doesn't make sense to you? What could read better? What do we still have questions about? So that communication piece is as good as it can be. And that still isn't a guarantee of future success necessarily, but just that we're communicating as clearly and as transparently as we can.
Yep.
I also believe very strongly, to your point, Karen, that there shouldn't be a financial cost to our members for us to do this, because we benefit at the system side. We know that we keep sorters, that one particular position, for about 1.9 months. And that's the average generally before they find a new position. And that's the nature of the work. It's part-time for the most part. We have a lot of college students that, you know, in both in all three communities that they're at the university and they're working. They may find something better. It may not work with their schedule, you know, and they have to change part-time jobs, and that's okay. But we're going to continue to have to sort. So if there's a way for us to do that and keep that cost under control, that's why, you know, we are looking at this. We have a couple of staff, I would say, that are part-time sorters that have been with us for several years, and they would likely stay with us. But, you know, it works for them, right? For whatever reason, that part-time job is what they where they need to be for their life. So that's the other thing that the working group has expressed is a concern that IHLS staff would be displaced. And so we've been pretty transparent about, you know, how quickly we have that turnaround for sorters, and that it isn't our intention for anyone to lose a position. And regardless, if we have any system that we were to get, would still need someone to maintain it. And we will always have items that have to be hand sorted, items from libraries that don't participate in share. And we're going to always need that. It's just, how do we get it to a place where that's more of a static group of employees that stays, that remains, so that the investment that we make in somebody, we can see the benefit from that investment in an employee. So I will have this on this proposal on the draft agenda that goes to the executive committee for the May board meeting. My thought is that since it's new, and the way we'd have to do the agenda anyway would have to come after the board would approve the budget and the operational plan. So I think that would be the natural order to occur in the meeting. I haven't talked yet to Rhonda about whether or not this also goes to the finance committee. I think before maybe all of you were in there, in this meeting, we were talking about how some things tend to go to one committee, then another one, and then another one, and then to the board. And by then, almost everybody on the board has seen it because of other committees that they're on. Like, maybe that's not always the best approach to take everything to every committee. But I haven't talked to Rhonda about whether or not she thinks that this should be, and she would talk to Kevin Latos about it being on the finance committee agenda, but I suspect that we're going to have to. Anyway, we'll just have that conversation. I appreciate all of your feedback. I really do. This will help us in crafting a proposal and keeping us honest, keeping us like focused on what is our objective with all of this. So I do appreciate it.
I'm not trying to beat you up, but please.
Oh no.
I want you to be able to have the ammunition that you need to say, and this is why we're doing it.
Yeah.
So that I can say, okay, yes, it's whatever, but payback is 10 years or payback is 8 years or whatever it is. If I don't know that, then I have to say no until you can prove to me that it makes sense, because I'm going to put a dollar sign in front of everything. That's what I do.
Okay. Can I just ask you one clarifying question? Yeah. Are you saying, are you concerned about the amount of money that we have proposed in the budget to work with a consultant for an RFP to get more information so we can make a definitive yes, no?
Slightly, but not, $30,000 isn't that big a deal.
Okay, I don't know if it's exactly 30, but I feel like it's around that. Yeah. Okay.
30,000 well spent is much better than just spending without knowing what we're doing.
Okay. So
if you're gonna spend $30,000 on a consultant, he better be darn sure that he's giving you that kind of financial information, or he's going to not be a happy fellow.
Okay. Okay.
As a consultant, I will tell you that.
Okay.
That's his
deliverable. He is, we would propose to work with the same person we use with the RFI. There, I don't know of another consultant that works in that field right now. Maybe in the commercial side of things, but not in the nonprofit world, in the library world. And we did reach out to him. We did reach out to him and ask him if we were to go further with this so that we could put information in the proposed budget, what would it cost? You know, what would your fees be? And he gave us several options. If I just stay here, and he's based in Massachusetts, if I do everything from Massachusetts, X amount of meetings, this much time to draft the RFP, meet with your staff or your committee, your team, this is what it would be. If I travel to each of your locations, this is what it would be. If I travel to other locations that also have this kind of equipment, that's what it would be. So we kind of picked the middle, which was the work with us on the RFP, get that drafted, and also visit our three locations. So, but not to go visit other installations. I don't think that we need him to do that as well. So that was a judgment call. I would just feel more comfortable about him actually seeing what our sorting areas look like in each of our buildings, just to be sure he knows what he's talking about.
It helps. It does help. You know, yeah. If I go to a client, I get a lot more information in 10 minutes than I do on 10 hours of Teams calls.
Okay.
So it does help, okay. But it's expensive. It's $1,500 every time I make a trip. You know, I just know that.
So I appreciate your candidness. That helps me a lot. I don't have anything else under this item.
Did you want to say anything about the vehicle surplus?
I do. And Karen, I think you and maybe Kevin might have missed part of this conversation. I don't remember. Karen, definitely, because I know you've had a little bit of time getting logged in. We have several vehicles that have been surplus by the board over the last several years, and we've kept them because we've used them as like a backup vehicle, mostly because it seems to have taken a long time to have some things repaired. Like if a vehicle's down, it's in the shop, it takes 3 months sometimes to get something repaired that because of the supply chain issue. So we've kept these. We now purchased, I think we've purchased four vehicles. So we have several that we are ready to put up for auction. In the last couple of years ago, we started, we added to this process of asking the board to approve items to be made surplus by including a minimum bid value and sharing that with the board. So we use 75% of what the Kelley Blue Book says for a private sale is the amount. We place it at 75% of that total. And so we've been sharing that with the board along with these recommendations for items to be surplus. As we were going through Monday and, wait, is today only Tuesday?
Yes.
Tuesday. Yes, it is. Okay, so it was only on Monday. So yesterday we were going through and making sure we had everything ready so that we could start that process of posting things online that are available that we would have up for auction. And Colleen uncovered that one of these vehicles had been approved. They'd all been approved for surplus. But only one of them had we not shared with the board what the cost for the surplus, the recommended starting price would be for the auction. So I'm like, well, but the board's already approved it for surplus. She's like, yeah, but we followed a new procedure. So we need to tell them. So she drafted a memo. I'm like, it's too late for it to go to facilities and community operations because their meeting is tomorrow. We can't change the agenda. So I told her that I would share this with you. I think she intends to share this with the finance committee at their meeting next Monday as well. So if you don't mind, I'll just let you know about this one vehicle. And it will also, I think, go to the board. So you'll see it. You'll learn about it again. The vehicle is a Chevrolet Express Cargo. It is a 2015 model. has approximately 225,000 miles on it. Currently at the Champagne Hub, it's used as a backup, and that minimum bid amount that we would have is $6,183 is where it would start. So I know you can't take action on it, but I did want to make you aware of this just because your committee's been made aware of this before.
$6,000 for 275,000 miles.
225, yeah. Is that low, you think, or high?
It's high.
Oh, okay.
High, really, feels really high to me.
Okay.
But I don't know.
But that's based off of Kelley Blue Book for private sale, right?
Correct. Yeah, we use the Kelley Blue Book private sale for an item that's in good condition. And I would say because our vehicles are well-maintained, that would count as a good condition. So we will see. And maybe, you know, I know used vehicle prices, I heard the other day on NPR, are starting to moderate a little, but I think they're still high. So maybe that also has part of that's involved in there. We'll see. But just wanted to let you all know that so that you were aware.
I just have a question. Did the majority of the vans that were recently purchased, are they all in Carbondale, or a lot of them?
I don't know. I know one went to Champaign for sure.
Yeah. My husband drove noticed? By the other day and he said it looked like a lot of new vans on the lot there at Carbondale. So I just wondered.
Yeah, they haven't been, we need to get them into service, and we haven't, once we got the licensing taken care of for those, they haven't had the logo and the wrap, I guess it's what it's called, put on the vehicle yet. Because we need to use them. And to be fair, and to be honest, we got an estimate for vehicle insurance, and it was rather high. And then we realized, oh, we've got these other vehicles we will not be using. We need to move them.
Yeah.
And so that will reduce the cost to renew that vehicle insurance.
Good. Okay. Any further discussion about vehicles or anything else under unfinished business? Okay, we have no new business, is that right?
Correct.
Okay, public comment, still none. Any announcements? No announcements. Okay, then I've got 4:49 and would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Karen, second please. Okay, thank you. Karen Bounds.
Yes.
We have a motion and a second. Do you say yes?
Yes.
Oh, got it. Sorry. Kevin Kelsey.
Yes.
Emmy Krause.
Yes.
Okay. See you all later.
Thank you all. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Hopefully it won't take me so long to get online next time.
Start early.
Well, I did start, but Zoom had to update itself.
Oh, okay.
And it's like, what? So hopefully I won't have that problem next time.
Okay. Thank you all.
Something.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.